and they took him down and they killed him for no apparent reason.
And the explanation of the Justice Department why they have not moved on this in 4 years?
They're saying that they are turning over every stone, that they are making sure before they make a decision. How many stones are there? How many pebbles of sand do they have to turn over?
We want to thank you for being with us. Gwen Carr, mother of Eric Garner, African-American father, Staten Island resident, killed by police 4 years ago this week as they took him down, pinning him in a fatal chokehold as he gasped, "I can't breathe," 11 times. Grandmother of Erica Garner, yes, who also fought so hard for justice, yes, for her father's death. And that does it for our show. We have job openings, full-time news producer position here in New York. Please go to democracynow.org to apply immediately. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Nirmeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Trina Dura Nat Needham. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO, Portland.
While in Atlanta, Danny Lyon joined the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and acted as staff photographer from 1962 to 1964. His first solo photography book, The Bike Riders, A Study of Outlaw Motorcyclists, was published in 1968. Following his publication of The Bike Riders, Lyon completed documentary work on the Texas prison system. Lyon's work is very personal and gives us, the viewer, access to people and places we wouldn't normally get to see.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Danny Lyon film screening on Wednesday, July 18th at 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. Danny Lyon will be in Portland to show the films Willie and Murderers. Again, that's the Danny Lyon film screening on Wednesday, July 18th at 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO has a tent set up at the Occupy ICE encampment in southwest Portland, where we are broadcasting and webcasting live reports from the camp.
Protesters have created a community of resistance since June 17th to protest the deportation and separation of families by the U.S.
U.S. Department of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE.
Check our website for a schedule of upcoming broadcasts and listen to our past interviews at kboo.fm/OccupyICE.
This is Wednesday morning talk radio. This is Lou, and with me this morning, there's a couple of people in the studio. Sally Fronsman Cecil, who's an organizer with Gray Panthers and is kind of helping do organizing at Portland State and other places. But there's also Maria Garcia. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Maria, people may remember, ran for county commission in the May 15th primary. Another candidate won that particular race. Maria also owns La Revolution coffee shop, which is by Portland State. I've been there a couple times briefly. I thought I would mention a few things and then try to get into asking questions, specifically since Maria was able to come today. people may be aware in terms of how we're doing Wednesday morning that Paul Rowland normally has this slot. He's gone for a while. It looks like there'll be a different person doing the program next Wednesday and a week after that. And Paul's supposed to be back in 3 weeks, I understand. People may or may not be keeping track of local things that are going on. I just thought I'd mention a few of them before we start seeing what thoughts and things Maria is working on. I was able to go to Occupy ICE, as many KBOO people have been able to do. It was very interesting, of course, very organized, I thought. There's also a group, and I haven't specifically heard this, but I don't listen to KBOO 24 hours a day. A pretty big protest movement by SUSU at Portland State in support of Black Lives Matter and NAACP advocating for the campus police at Portland State to not be armed because there is a man who was shot a couple weeks ago and killed by campus police who are now armed outside Cheerful Tortoise, probably the main bar at PSU. I told one of the organizers that this particular incident, as someone who has a master's degree from Portland State in secondary education, makes me ashamed to have that degree from what some student activists are starting to call Police State University. A couple of things I thought I'd mention at the outset. One of the issues that Sally's particular group and I both work on is on housing, among other issues, with Portland Gray Panthers. What else should we mention? People, of course, if they listen to the Tuesday morning program, heard quite a bit, and we can address it if it comes up, about Trump's Russia visit and basically supporting Putin on that trip. I also think, since this looks like, at least for now, the last time Sally and I will be doing this right away, there's four ballot initiatives that look like they're going to be on the November election, which I think it would be worthwhile to try to mention at least and see if we could talk about it a bit. There's also a debate at the moment between the mayor, Ted Wheeler, and the Portland police about the percentage of homeless people who are being arrested by Portland police. Apparently, 3% of Portland's population are homeless, but more than 50% of arrests are of those people. So those are the notes I made of things to try to mention at the outset. I should start with asking Maria, and it's fine in like your opening thing if you wanted to say some things in Spanish and some things in English. I heard you talk at International Women's Day at Pioneer Square, I believe in March, and thought you were a great speaker. But I was looking to try to find more ways to hear things that you worked on. But it sounds like from what you told me before, there's two or three projects you're working on that are coming up. So if you would talk a bit about, I guess, your background and then what those projects are, that'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah, gracias. Buenos días. Good morning. Maria Garcia. I am a local business owner. Revolution Coffee House is the name of my business. I'm a former employee of the Mexican consulate. I was born and raised in Mexico City. I live in Palm Springs before I moved to Portland. That was about 9 years ago. And now, running my business has been a beautiful experience because not just the nature of my business, promoting Mexican gastronomy and coffee, right? Which I'm very proud of being the pioneer of the concept of a Mexican cafeteria in Portland. But social justice is very close to my heart. I have friends who are incarcerated, and that's actually what send me to activism, right? The injustice that I've seen happening inside the Department of Corrections and different institutions. But, well, that's a different topic. But it's how I got involved into this activism and through my friend Teresa Rayford, who's my mentor and good friend. I've been working
closely. And Teresa's Black Lives Matter or Don't Shoot Portland?
Don't Shoot Portland. She's the founder and organizer of Don't Shoot Portland. I'm the president of the organization. Mm-hmm. And Teresa is probably the most outspoken activist in Oregon about the Black Lives Matter movement here. So I'm working in a few things, to be specific, two of them. Due to this immigration wave of problems that our communities are having, and by the way, it's been happening for so many years, right? So I have one employee who is from El Salvador, who makes the tamales, the pupusas that we sell at the shop. So we're going to be having a fundraiser on the 21st, Saturday. We're going to be selling pupusas outside the shop, and she's going to be making them together with her mom. Why are we doing this? Because she needs money to pay for lawyer's fees. Her brother is going through the asylum process, and they don't have a lawyer, right? So it's going to cost them between $10,000 $15,000 to get a lawyer, plus all the expenses that they have already, the money they have invested into paying the bail. You know, $20,000 is what cost them to get him out from Texas and bring him over here from the detention center. So we're talking about serious issues here, because as a business owner, affects me also, because Karina is a really sweet, hard worker woman. Really, she is. And back in December, she fell down. She broke her arm, right? And of course, you need your two hands to make tamales and pupusas, right? And in that time, I was campaigning. So I was short one employee, my main employee, for the cook, right? So I have to spend more hours at the shop, take care, obviously, of my business. She couldn't work for a few weeks and affected the productivity of my business, right?
Your fundraiser is this Saturday, is that correct?
Yes.
And
yes.
Is it 9 to 5 or it's all day? Or?
Well, we're working on the details. Sure. It's probably going to be around lunchtime. Usually Saturdays we open from 7 to 2. Sure. So what we're thinking is about doing it between 11 to 2 p.m.
Right. And I think I mentioned Portland State people like me may know, having been there, where it is. But did you want to give the address?
Yes, 1432 Southwest 6th Avenue, right in the corner of 6 and Clay, next to Hotel Modera. So we're going to be doing this fundraiser for her. I just wanted to give you a little feedback about what's going on and why we're doing this.
Portland State, at times, will support activist stuff. It's a big school. I wrote an article and sent it to a couple of papers. It hasn't gotten printed yet, but some of us at PSU were able to get funding to go to El Salvador for a week for a study tour, and I was one of the people that got to go. We spent a couple of days in San Salvador, downtown, the capital. We went to Chalatenango, which was one of the rebel strongholds towards Honduras. We spent a couple of days in Arquetao, which is a pretty small town in Salvador, next to the Honduran border. We crossed the Simpul River and were told about the Civil War, and there was a massacre on that river by the right-wing death squad people who were supported by the Reagan administration in the United States. We also got to, I learned a fair amount, I knew a little before about Archbishop Romero in El Salvador, too. We went to the church where he was assassinated. He was a spokesman for workers and poor folks. We looked at the small house where he lived, at the cancer hospital where he worked, and we went to, his grave is in the basement of the cathedral in downtown El Salvador. So I think it's really helpful for the KBOO community in particular to know about specific ways. Obviously, there's Occupy ICE on Southwest McAdam on immigration as a focus point and a national leader in organizing on immigration issues. But I think it's very helpful to know about specific things. I think you also mentioned there's a Day of the Dead thing that you may be working on.
Can I just add
something really quick?
You know, I know there are many organizations raising funds and trying to help our community members, but there are many community members that they don't go to any organizations, right? Like my employee. And she has to reach out to different organizations, and they cannot help her because I know they're saturated, you know? Mm-hmm. But the action that I'm doing is something directly, is direct help, right, to a specific individual. Mm-hmm. And like her, I can tell you a list of several names of people that are in deep need that they don't go to organizations, actually. So we're going to be working, this is one project, but I'm working on other, names, other people that have different issues. And it comes to money and legal representation, what we need. Right. So we are going to be working on that. And then Day of Death celebration. I'm working with Portland Art Museum. November 2nd, we're going to have this beautiful Day of Death celebration. We're working on the details. It's going to be one day celebration. Last year, we worked with PNCA, and we have an exhibition going on. It was beautiful, together with Portland Art Museum, too. This year, I'm very happy because Portland Art Museum opened the doors for us, and it's something that I think we have to have in the Portland Art Museum. We need to have Latino art and culture and programming. And we're in that conversation, right? But this is the beginning of a big celebration, and it's going to be very interesting because what I'm planning on, or we're planning on, is through the social elements that are affecting our Portland into this big celebration. And we're going to do it through food, through music, but through building altars that will have a specific topic. It's going to be beautiful. I will let you know exactly the details next time, but just put it in your calendar, November 2nd. Probably it might be from 6 to 9, but we will confirm the hours.
Good. I should probably mention, you may already be following this, Maria, and Sally might as well, but I mentioned the ballot measures. One of those is a ballot measure by right-wing activists in Oregon to repeal the sanctuary law in Oregon. And it looks like there's a number of pretty mainstream groups, like Nike as a corporation, that's opposing that because workers are important to businesses and people are important. And there's been some discussion at Portland State about how effective PSU is as a sanctuary city. I don't know if you have any thoughts on either the ballot measure or how well Portland's doing as a city on at being a sanctuary location.
Well, being a sanctuary city, I mean, it sounds good and it may look in a paper, but actions are different. As long as our communities continue being separated, as long as we continue having profiling, as long as we continue having incarceration of our youth, and, you know, we don't have a sanctuary city. I understand what will be the problem if people vote positive, you know, yes, on IP22. It means it's just going to be harder for our community members, for everybody, right? There's going to be more targeting, more profiling, but all these elements are already existing, and they have been existed for so many years, right? This is just what is going to validate those actions. Mm-hmm. That's my perspective.
Right. So one of the things I was going to try to ask you about, and I'll give the phone number here, we are a live call-in talk show, of course, was about the election, which is how I heard your name or and knew about your business as well. Did you want to say anything about the election? Or one of the questions I've had, Sally and I have both been to a few DSA meetings, Democratic Socialists of America, and we asked one candidate to be on the program who said, I'll come as long as I don't have to talk about the DSA endorsement process or the lack of that process. When you decided to file for county commission, did you have an idea of how successful or in what way you're going to try to be elected, or did you have another goal? And then if you have any comments on the DSA election thing, that would be useful maybe.
Yeah. I'm open to all kind of questions, just, you know, but well, I decided to run because, as I said before, my friend Teresa Rafer encouraged me to do it, right? I never thought that I will be running for office, right? But Teresa helped me to see value in myself, mm-hmm. right? As an individual, as a woman, as who I am and the things that I've done. And I really appreciate that opportunity. And it takes a lot of money, a lot of courage, a lot of time. I had no life, you know. It was really hard because I am not a politician, right? And I don't have probably the right language to communicate with people the things that I really want to do, right? But it helped me to build a platform. It helped me, this campaign, it helped me to get to know new people and get my name out there. For me, nothing changed. because I'm still working on what I'm doing, serving the mm-hmm. best way I can, right? But I saw where the power comes from, mm-hmm. and it's not from the people, definitely.
Right.
Right? Everything is prearranged. I see status quo everywhere, and I have no problem calling it because I see it. And I'm from Mexico City. I come from a very corrupted city, you know, so I recognize it. And what I see in politics here locally is that everybody knows everybody. They're friends mm-hmm. of. And let me just give you an example.
No, go ahead.
There was a forum organized by Unite Oregon and CAUSA, and I don't remember what other organizations participated on this. So they sent us the invitation. We went, all candidates running for Commissioner District 2. So I walk out of the forum because I knew that the organizers, the organizations that already endorsed one of the candidates.
Right. Which I can't pronounce her name. I think she's the one that won. Shalila Japela? Or you may
Sushila,
have
yeah. So they already, you know, endorse her. They already support her. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's an insult. You send invitations to hear about the candidates, right? But you're already selecting one, you know. So I walk out of the place and I say, you know what? I'm not going to be entertaining anybody because this is not fair. What is the point of putting this together, mm-hmm. right? So it's a big hypocrisy that I see around the city and organizations and including unions, the way they work, you know. And I'm not against unions.
Right. Well, we're pretty much for unions. And
KBU's
a union
station
that staffs unions.
No, I'm not against it. But I am against the bad leadership, you know. And we have that everywhere, right? So we need to be able to recognize these problems. Otherwise, there's not going to be an effective change. And I'm not trying to point at anybody,
no,
but it's a reality.
Well, you're the one who is there knowing how it's
and
like
I was
being a
there,
candidate.
And I saw that, you know. So when we're talking about changing politics, we really have to be part of it. And that's what I wanted. I wanted to be part of it. I wanted to learn the process. I wanted to see where the power was. And definitely, it's not within the people.
One of the reasons that I liked your campaign myself was at Portland State, we decided at one point, quite a while ago, in 94, I believe, I was encouraged and filed for Portland City Council. And we didn't really have money and we didn't really run a campaign, but we got ballot statements, which I think might have been free then. And it was against a pretty entrenched and revered longtime Democratic politician, Gretchen Kofori, who was on city council, who won very easily. But it gave me a little bit like what you're saying, although it's a different time and place and different issues. Housing was our big issue then, and still is an issue now, actually, so that was the same. But it gave me an insight, and it was very useful in terms of networking. Like the issues we were already working on, we heard from new people who cared about those issues that we hadn't met, and so it increased our capacity to do better organizing. At this point, I appreciate the answer. Well, I should also mention the reason I asked you about the DSA endorsement process is, rightly or wrongly, Willamette Week quoted you, I believe, about that specific organization, Democratic Socialists of America, being somewhat problematic. And I don't know if you wanted to add anything about that. If you don't, that's fine.
Well, I have good, close friends that are members of DSA, and I respect the work they do, you know. I mean, I have nothing against them other than I think that their values should reflect their actions, you know. And I think that's fair to ask, right? When I was participating in the meeting when we were looking for the endorsement, and just an hour before they sent an email saying that as a candidate I wasn't worth it together with Julia DeGroe and Casey. We weren't worth it. We didn't bring anything good, you know, to the table. And an hour before, that's disrespectful, you know. Why did you bother to send a questionnaire if you're not going to, you know, work on the process of endorsement? Why do you invite the candidates if you don't want to support them? You know, that's the part that I have a problem with. You know, so when you are working in specific causes, right? You're serving the community. An hour before, you don't tell the community, guess what? I wanted to help you really bad, but guess what? I'm not going to help you because all of a sudden, I don't think you're worth it. And this is how I took it, right?
Well, the three candidates you mentioned, yourself, who I hadn't met before, and Casey Jama, who I've known for 20 years from Portland State stuff, before he even had Unite Oregon, or changed the name three times, actually. And Julia and I voicemailed back, Julia DeGraw, who ran against Nick Fish, an entrenched incumbent, but a Democrat, and fairly liberal on some issues. Because the three of you, and what I read, were people, and I went to this DSA meeting where they talked at SEIU, at a union place, for an hour about their process, and it seemed very frustrating for the people who were there who belong to DSA and trying to get it to be more organized. So I appreciate your comments about that. I should give the number. I'm glad that Maria is able to come. Sally's been fairly quiet so far, but that's fine. I'm sure she'll have some analytical deconstructions to make. If you wish to call in, it's 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. Sure. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. I really like this topic that the guest is talking about in terms of changing, not really looking to change politics. You know, I was the problem with a lot of what's going on is that all of the strides we've made in terms of civil rights for people of color have been all legal. They've all been political. And we've never been able to crack the nut of changing the culture surrounding people of color. And now that we've got a president in the White House who is actively seeking to tear apart communities of color, you know, we need to have that discussion more than ever. And I think it's really important to note, especially to have a lot of white liberal friends who are talking about, you know, what we need to do is we need to impeach or we need to do this. And you know, and they're really active about rallying, about trying to rally the troops for impeaching Trump. But, you know, I keep bringing up to him, it's like, well, what are your plans? I mean, how are you going to... Basically, what I'm getting at is that, you know, people of color have been used in many elections, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, I use the word use. You know, we've been used in many elections in order to achieve a political gain, but then we end up getting nothing in return. And so a lot of them can't understand why we're not trying, why we, you know, many of us didn't hold our nose and vote for Hillary, you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, so I mean, I don't know, like, I guess a question for the guests is like, what would you say to, how would you bring it up for, or how would you explain it to white liberal folks on how we should work on changing the culture surrounding how our country feels about people of color?
Sure. I think, Maria, do you have some thoughts or
Sally? Thank you. You know, I think being Mexican, and I don't like these people of color, but I know it's how, you know, it's fashionable now, but as the Mexican woman I am, you know, I can tell you that what I see is a lot of fear. It's mm-hmm. a lot of fear in the Latino community, the Black community, and the African community, and all people of color, fear for success, mm-hmm. fear for taking leadership, you know, because I guess we are used to having always a white male or woman mm-hmm. above us, right? And I'm telling you this because I know I participate in different committees in I'm a co-chair of the New Portland Policy Commission too, and we are a commission of 25 immigrants, and most of us are people of color, right? And there's always, what I see is this fear, you know, about asking something for our communities when we should be demanding what is right for us. We shouldn't be asking, what would you like me to tell my community? What would you like me to provide to my community? Give me something, you know, begging for. No. We have to change the narrative. And I'm not saying we have to fight or be nasty or anything like that, but demand what is fair, you know, demand what we need. And what we need is to open the doors for our community leaders, and we need to demand in our own community, to our own leaders, to please don't tokenize your people. we have to start there, because in our communities we have people that have grown one way or another. They have positioned themselves really high and they can do some much for their community, but guess what? They have to respond to somebody else and they sell their communities very cheap. So right there is a problem. So how do we change this narrative? How do we empower our own people and those that are already empowered and are people of color? How do we demand them not to sell their communities cheap? We have an internal problem right there. So I guess it's just, you know, continue working, continue talking to our people and calling things by their name. Mm-hmm. You're corrupt. Yeah. Sorry, you're corrupt. And I don't care if you're black, you're Mexican, you're white, you're corrupt. You're not serving. Yeah. I don't care your nationality. You're not serving. And you can be my sister. And I can tell you, you are not serving the people. You're not functioning. You are damaging our communities. I have no problem with that. So we have to break the barrier of fear and being truthful, calling things by their name and, you know, their actions. If they're not working, they're not working. Sorry.
Well, in a case
absolutely. And that's where I'm coming from. That's so great to hear, because, I mean, I'm third generation Mexican American Chicano, you know, and I have a lot of white family, and a lot of my white family voted for Trump, and there's even some of my Mexican family voted for Trump, and I don't speak to them. I told, you know, that's what I tell them. It's like, you are damaging our community, so I don't have anything to do with them. So it's really refreshing to hear. Thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for your call. And let me just add something, because I've been reflecting about why Trump won. And I think it's because Trump reflects the American dream, right? Mm-hmm. He's a white, powerful man, right? Wealthy. In the American culture is based on money, you know? Wealthy with a pretty wife, and you know, he has all this material. It's exactly, but he has, you know, the picture is perfect,
sure,
right? So a lot of people, I think, voted for him because it reflects what the American dream is. Like, if he can be that way and he can have all that, I can have that too, you know, even if I'm not part of it, right? But I reflect, I see myself living that way, even though I'm not that person.
Yeah, I think that's pretty appalling when you think about, you can see how he got there.
Exactly.
I mean, it's like, who wants to be the person that walks over other people like that? For that matter, of course, I'm a feminist, but why do women buy into that patriarchal model of the American dream? It's not my dream to be a wealthy, you know, American white politician oligarch, certainly. And I don't know why it should be any woman's dream, honestly. Look how the way he treats women.
Among other people, yes.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm just even looking, just one example of why do people buy into that? You know, what about that narrative is attractive? But of course, more to the point is, do we have an alternative narrative that's more attractive? I think one of the things that happened with Bernie Sanders' campaign is that I'm a Democratic socialist. He is a Democratic socialist. He does not deny being a socialist. He talks socialism. He has acted on socialism in Congress. Now, he's not perfect, but still, that brought a lot of people into a more progressive politics, into even more radical politics, like you'd argument more radical Marxist politics. And that's changing that narrative. I agree with you so much that if you're going to be effective, you have got to say something different, you have got to want something different, and you've got to work for something different.
Exactly. And I think that I am a free person. You know, I own my business. I don't have to respond to anybody, mm-hmm. but my customers and the people that trust me, and I'm grateful for their support. But that allows me to speak my mind too. Mm-hmm. Because I don't receive money from the government, right there, that's a problem, right? But I do have friends that work in government and, you know, companies. And I always tell them, you have to push to the limits, mm-hmm. right? Because I understand we have families, we have bills, and we don't want to lose that security. I understand that, right? But we have to push to the limits. If it's in your hands to advocate for somebody for a good cause, even if you're being treated unfairly at work, you have to speak up. You have to say something. You know, that's part of the change. When you call things by their name, mm-hmm. and you just don't, you know, put your head down and allow things to happen and people to walk over you because you don't want to lose your job. You know, that's part of the fear that our society has, right? Mm-hmm. The fear of losing my job, losing mm-hmm. my family, losing my privilege, right? That's understandable. But if you have to lose it, guess what? You have to lose it. Mm-hmm. Because if you really want change to happen, you have to let go a lot of things. And mm-hmm. maybe you have to let go your job. Maybe you have to let go that relationship. Maybe you have to let go something. Mm-hmm. It's how change takes place. Because that's part of a new phase in your life. And mm-hmm. this can be taking place at work or at home. So in order to see, a substantial change in our society and our government, we as individuals have to allow the change to happen. Mm-hmm. Not allowing corruption, not allowing violence, but mainly being honest with ourselves. Like you say, why as a woman you allow this? As women, we allowed a lot of things. And it's our nature to, you know, deal with pain, physical mm-hmm. or emotional, and we've been blessed that way, you know, with the strength to do it. But it doesn't have to be part of our nature, mm-mm. you know, the pain and suffering and sacrifices. No, we decide that it's part of us. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't. You know, we have to continue work and pushing to the limits and not allowing people to walk over us, period. I don't care if you're a white Mexican, you know, woman, we allowed so much.
Things will happen. It's even if you're not pushing, things are going to happen. The clock is going to be rolled back on civil rights. The clock is going to be rolled back on how immigrants are treated. The clock is going to be rolled back on how women are treated. If you do not stand your ground, at the very least, you know, if you're not pushing, at least realize that you have to stand your ground because the powers that be right now are looking to tear it out from under you.
Exactly. There's two or three housekeeping things I should try to mention at this point. And again, if people want to call in and ask questions or comments, it's 503-231-8187. One thing that we get to do on the morning talk programs is mention for people who maybe just be tuning in upcoming stuff today on KBOO. There's a Project Censored program with Peter Byrne, who I haven't heard of, but we can find out more for those of us who haven't heard of Peter. He's a journalist, and he's talking about roots of white nationalism. And that's at 9, so that's after this program. There's Air Cascadia at 10 o'clock. Dennis Bernstein, who I've heard his name often, has a program, Flashpoints, at 10:30. 11 a.m. this morning, there's a food program called The Food Show, which deals with politics of food. I should mention Sally and I both know each other from working on the Nestle boycott, an older boycott against poverty and infant formula malnutrition in the global South. There's been a couple Nestle boycotts, but the politics of food is really useful and important mm-hmm. Since I think you probably have food at your coffee store. food is really interesting. I just sent in an article to the Tribune, and I'm doing one to the Observer, a couple local papers, about the politics of food. I mentioned ballot measures. There's an interesting ballot measure that Mary King in Street Roots, used to be chair of economics at Portland State and has worked a lot with unions and labor organizations. She wrote an article describing this particular ballot measure about food. And what it is, it's a right-wing corporate, Sally may have seen a bit about mm-hmm. this as well, or you and Maria. It's when people gathered signatures for this who were getting paid at Portland State, we'd ask them, and so isn't this like a corporate grocery store profit protection law, and they would say, no, it's like to outlaw a sales tax. But it's in response to efforts around the country in different cities, including Portland, to tax sugar and soft drinks, very much like cigarettes are taxed, which has resulted in decreased healthcare costs and people getting sick from nicotine. And sugar and diabetes seem like a big global problem, particularly in the United States. So we'll see if that there appears to be some interesting, more mainstream groups that are against giving more money to grocery stores under false pretenses. I think I saw that Nike is going to be working with Our Oregon against that measure. The other thing I should mention is people, of course, hear this on KBOO, but KBOO's listener-supported, member-supported. I think Maria said she's a member. Mm-hmm. So if people want to be a member, they can go to kboo.fm. And there's a click where people can donate. The other thing I was going to mention is, I don't know if we're, I think there's a tendency on the left to be, especially when we talk about, one caller mentioned the impeachment thing with Trump. And I think that's a really good issue and very important. But I've mentioned a couple times to Joe, who has the Tuesday morning program, and given him written stuff last December and this last month, of tying it to local issues so that people mm-hmm. can do something local as well as talk about mm-hmm. impeachment. And putting women's voices, and whether people are from Mexico or El Salvador, at the forefront seems really helpful. There are positive developments. One of the things that we've been doing at Portland State is holding public forums, community forums. Maria's welcome to come at some point on Saturdays at 4 p.m. at Chit Chat Cafe. We're going to do one a week from Saturday. It doesn't conflict with the fundraiser. July 28th. And there's a woman named Suk Ree, not a household name in Portland. Her first name is Suk, S-U-K. Her last name's Ree, R-H-E-E. She manages what used to be the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, which has been dealing with issues raised by Casey Dama and other activists of color, which might be a bad term, but Casey's from Somalia, about the neighborhood organizations in Portland traditionally representing kind of white, suburban, affluent neighborhoods at the expense of disenfranchised groups, homeless people, immigrants, low-income people. And Suk's going to come. We're going to try to get some other speakers at that as well and have a community discussion. Chit Chat Cafe is a locally owned mom and pop. Alex is the owner. He's from Taiwan. He bought it from a Japanese guy who owned it before when it was called American Espresso. It's pretty quiet. They have classical music. So that's at 4 p.m. on Saturday, July 28th, the Saturday after Maria's event. And we've also been doing outreach in terms of organizing, hopefully at some point this will be useful at KBOO as well, to people nationally that are making strides forward in terms of women's voices and, I guess, changing the narrative on politics. Specifically, I've sent stuff to London Breed, who people may not be familiar with her name, but she's apparently the first African-American woman mayor elected of San Francisco, and that's fairly close. We've had speakers from California come to Portland State in the past. And also to Alexandria Cortez, who looks like she'll be a shoo-in in November to represent part of New York City. She's 28, Puerto Rican, and defeated a longtime incumbent white Democratic congressional person. So she looks like another progressive voice that we can try to network with and see if these people may be able to come to speak at Portland, despite having busy schedules and or being elected officials. We've also done outreach to the Portland police situation is fairly interesting at the moment on a couple different fronts. There's the police shooting by campus police I mentioned at Portland State. There's this debate between, I mentioned at the outset, between Ted Wheeler and Daryl Turner, who's president of the Portland Police Bureau, and an African-American president of the police bureau, who Daryl Turner famously in the last couple days said that Portland is a cesspool because of all the homeless people and drugs and garbage and syringes. And Ted Wheeler is saying, but the statistics that we found in a recent study are 50% or more of arrests by Portland police are homeless people. And yet homeless people constitute 3% of the population. Mm-hmm.
What is his point, I wonder?
Well, police unions, depending, I mean, there was a police strike in 1895 in Boston, I believe. So any union, and we've mentioned unions a couple times so far, can be like SEIU, which is a sanctuary union, can be very progressive and activist. And in different countries and in the United States at different points in time, unions have been absolutely at the forefront of progressive activist change, and also one of the main targets currently by the Supreme Court, along with other targets by Trump and his cohorts, women, minorities, a large strata of people. The Roe v. Wade controversy, mm-hmm. which looks like that may be something that gets rolled back
again.
But if enough people fight it, that can also be changed. Again, the number is 503-231-8132. Sure. So we had a request for information contacting Gray Panthers, which is an organization Sally and I have been volunteering with. 503-222-2974, and there's voicemail for that number. We put up a Facebook.
Yes.
We had a couple of volunteers who put it up for Gray Panthers. It's a Facebook thing, and the way that we have found it consistently is putting in on Facebook, despite Facebook's problems, Portland Gray Panthers, G-R-A-Y, Portland Gray Panthers 2018. There's a lot of information about Gray Panthers in the past, historically, when Maggie Kuhn started them, and other versions of Gray Panthers locally, but that's the best way to get to the current Facebook location. There's also an email address if people are interested in that. It's letters and numbers, P.O.B., like post office box, P.O.B. 40011@juno.com, J-U-N-O. And again, that number for Gray Panthers contact is 503-222-2974. If you want to call in, we have some time left here for the program today. 503-231-8187. We've been talking with Maria about social justice issues, immigration, how useful the designation of sanctuary city can be, is, or isn't. And then Sally's been mentioning some of the, I guess, what would you say, pitfalls of not standing up and fighting back against the current, it's not just national, it's not just Trump, but also local. I mentioned the ballot initiative. There's a couple others besides the grocery store profits initiative, which activist groups are against, of course. There's the sanctuary cities repeal initiative, which is a right-wing funded, supported. Sure. And there's also, people probably are aware of this, and we've been contacting both NARAL advocates and Planned Parenthood advocates in Oregon. There's a right to life petition to restrict abortion and women's ability to choose reproductive freedom in our state, which is one of the liberal states on that issue so far. So that's a third ballot measure to oppose. The fourth one, and it looks like we have a caller, I'll get to the caller in a second, is a local one. Metro has a housing bond to build more low-income housing. It looks like it'll be about $600 million worth if it gets approved. So far, it's opposed by a couple traditional right-wing groups. It looks like most mainstream political power people in Portland, without that so much alliteration, are for it. So hopefully it'll pass. Israel Beyer, who was StreetRoots manager for 15 years, supports it and thinks it's helpful to have more housing. It seems to be one of the gigantic problems that at least I'm not seeing or hearing anything out of the Trump administration, other than Ben Carson, who is African-American, saying that he wants to raise rent in HUD housing for low-income seniors and disabled tenants by 300%. That has to get through Congress, but that's one of the things that Gray Panthers is locally working against. It sounded like we have a caller. Are you there? Hello? Can you hear me?
There he is. Me?
Yes, go ahead. You're on.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. We're trying to do our blurbs, but also talk to us folks as well. Go ahead.
Okay. Unfortunately, I have to run, but I really needed to call in and ask you guys to please do your homework. I heard that you were reaching out to London Bree to have her speak at Portland State or
sure.
something?
Is that, did that we say her name wrong, or what was the inaccurate part?
No. London Breed, you guys need to do your homework. Mm-hmm. London Breed is just as bad of a corporate Democrat as you can ever find.
Nah.
She is not supported by progressives in San Francisco. She was my district supervisor. I lived there for 28 years. I could not stand her. She literally is one of the worst corporate Democrats ever. She was elected mayor in San Francisco, running on this progressive "I'm an African American woman" thing, which garnered a lot of attention, and a lot of people liked her like that. Now she's not horrible, but just do some work before you actually invite her. She's not supported by Bernie Sanders folks down there. She's not supported by the LGBT community down there. She's been on record as making really lame gay jokes. You guys, please do your homework. That's all.
Sure. Well, it's one of the reasons to mention, and of course, if she were to come, which may or may not be likely, that's one of the things that we would hope to do, is to have people hold people accountable who get in the news, mainstream media or otherwise. I think I heard about that on KBOO, who may have a questionable record. Obviously, more locally, there's a clear choice, and as a designated official host, we're not allowed to say who we prefer, which is fine at KBOO. But there's an election in November where there's a fairly, it sounds like not what you've been saying in San Francisco about Lyndon Breed, but a fairly more or less conservative candidate, an African-American woman for city council in a runoff against a more, what would you say, activist, social justice focused candidate. Neither one of them got a majority in the May 15th primary that Maria was in for a different office. But that's a local example of why it helps to pay attention to specific things. Our thought,
talking about Joanne, right? Joanne Hardesty.
Well, she's one of the two, yes. The thing about keeping track of local stuff and as well as national stuff, like Alexandria Cortez in New York City or Lyndon Breed in San Francisco, is to learn more about what's going on in other states. One of the things we focused on a lot at Portland State is trying to find out more information and sharing information. One of the advantages we think of DSA, in fact, is that DSA seems to be national and seems to be fairly good at sharing information. There used to be more resources in my experience in Portland. The Portland Alliance, a newspaper that was around for 25 years, folded. Laughing Horse Bookstore was fairly useful as a resource point. As far as I understand, there's still Inari's Bookstore, an anarchist bookstore named after Ursula Le Guin book in North Portland. So anytime we can, and at Portland State, there's SUSU, which is working on the Black Lives Matter issue and disarming cops at PSU, which is also a good issue. It sounded like you needed to go. Thanks for calling.
Thanks
a lot. And again, if people have, we have a few minutes left, are welcome to call in 503-231-8137.
Can I say something? And thank you for the person that just called, because that's a very important point. And that's what I was referring to before. We have to call things by their name, right? And we need to speak up. We need to say whatever we know about the leaders. It is important. Mm-hmm. But we have to do our homework also before we elect these people. You know, mm-hmm. who are they? What are they working on? How close are they with the community? Because everybody can be self-proclaimed activists. And that doesn't mean that mm-hmm. the person is good for the community. Like in this case, Sushila proclaim herself as an activist. I am mm-hmm. an activist. I'm a protester. I have never seen her before.
This is the county commission.
Yes. Yeah. You know, so naming yourself an activist doesn't mm-hmm. mean that you are close to the community, right? Mm-hmm. So I saw you saw the results of the elections, right? And it was a big difference between her and me when we won, right?
And I think there were some other candidates. It seemed like Bruce Broussard came in second.
Bruce and
because
and
his name's well known, even though he's perennial.
You know, but in Sharon. But, you know, we're talking about get to know the candidates. Mm-hmm. Get to know where they're coming from, who their relatives are, you know, if there are other politicians too, because that is going to determine who's going to win the race, mm-hmm. right? So we have as citizens the responsibility of speaking up the truth. Those things that other people don't know and we know, we have to call it out. We have to tell people what's going mm-hmm. on, especially when we are being affected directly by the actions of these people, right? And just because it's a person of color, it doesn't mean that it's mm-hmm. good for the community, right? So now we have this race with city council, right, coming for November, mm-hmm. and two women of color. I respect them as the women they are, but how much do we know about them? How do they treat their employees? How mm-hmm. helpful they are with their community? Are they there just for the picture, for the mm-hmm. position, for the salary? We need to ask these questions, right? We need to ask questions to all candidates. Mm-hmm. And all candidates, they have to approach their communities with a different perspective. If communities don't speak English, they need to bring translators, and they need mm-hmm. to connect with them, and they need to know what their needs are. Not just go with the same people, with your friends. No, you go deep into the community, to those communities where they don't know about mm-hmm. you. You go there, right? So what kind of work all candidates do with the community? That has a lot to do in how they're going to perform once they take position, mm-hmm. once, you know, they're in the position of power mm-hmm. that they're seeking for, right? And it's how we hold elected officials accountable. But before, when we're campaigning, mm-hmm. that's the relationship. It's like boyfriend and girlfriend, right? Mm-hmm. You get to know mm-hmm. each other before you get married. When you're campaigning, it's when you ask all the questions. But what I see in politics here in Portland, you go to forums here, there, forums that are organized by just, mm-hmm. Specific organizations, and they consume all your time. And sometimes you are just telling your speech to other candidates because mm-hmm. the people are not there.
Well, I think also having been involved with electoral politics a fair amount more than, I think there's a narrative that elections don't matter. And nationally, it seems like the left mm-hmm. in the United States and the other 200 countries would argue that elections matter a great deal. Like, I don't know if you followed, I was extremely happy, not having been to Mexico, but to see Obrador win the presidency of Mexico a few weeks ago. And perhaps there's a critique. Perhaps there's a critique of Obrador as well, like Lyndon Reed.
I feel bad for this man because he's receiving a country full of crime and mm-hmm. deficit. And, so I really, really hope, that he remains alive from today to December, right? Because you don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. But he can really bring the change that Mexico needs.
Well, I just remember from before when he ran for president, I think he was mayor of Mexico City. And when he questioned the election results, which seemed questionable at the time, there was a big Occupy movement in Mexico City, I think for months, in support of him. So I don't know, it's unfair to compare and contrast different politicians from other countries when you haven't been there. But at least for a while, in many respects, in Venezuela, Hugo Chavez seemed to be a left progressive activist president of that country. And Obrador seems like he has the potential to do that as well.
Yeah.
I also want to, I think it's, we're running short of time, so we'll try to wrap up and do a few more comments here. I think it's really important, as someone who was the founding publisher and editor of two papers at Portland State, alternate papers to the main school paper, the Portland State Rear Guard, which doesn't get published anymore, but stayed around quite a while, and the Portland State Agitator. I think it's really important when we have resources to have alternate information so that, for example, the person that called in about Lyndon Reed in San Francisco, that we could have that person like write four paragraphs or something in a newspaper. I mentioned alternate institutions in Portland that have fizzled mm-hmm. out. My impression of the May 15th primary in particular, having written articles about the primary, because we think elections are really important. Traditionally, midterm elections, people vote a lot less than presidential years. And the statistic we found was that people aged 18 to 21 only vote at 15.15% in midterm elections. So mm-hmm. we want people to register, but also turn out to vote. And my impression from comparing and contrasting city council versus county commission races was that local media, the Tribune in particular, we sent in an article and we had four paragraphs about why we, and I won't say now who is which in our thing, but which candidates we supported and why. And they said, well, the article's too long, so you can mention their names, but take out all the reasons about why you think they're good. So that's what we wound up doing.
That's politics in Portland,
And it may be in other places as well, but Portland has like this weird paradoxical reputation of being sort of liberal and progressive. And yet, in some ways, it's not Berkeley, it's not Madison, it's not New York City, it's not Boston. Yeah.
Let me just give my last words here. In order to really have substantial change, we need new leaders, period. Mm. We need fresh people, you know, and that's my own perspective. And we really need to be serious about the change and be committed and ask all the questions and just don't follow propaganda, don't follow marketing, you know, just really do homework and get to know who the candidates are. But let's put something substantial for our people to vote also, because those numbers are really, really low. We need people to vote, but we don't offer anything good, you know. There's no trust, period. There's no trust. So my event is going to be on last Saturday of July, Revolution Coffee House. We're going to have a pupusa sale for my employee, Karina, from 11 to 2. So that's the 28th.
Yeah, it's
the 28th. Right, okay, I thought I said it before. So anyway, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks a lot
me.
For coming.
Thank you.
Sure.
There's the music.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meetings policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Finance Committee meets the fourth Monday of every month at 4:30 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor PDX Pop on Saturday, July 21st and Sunday, July 22nd at Audio Cinema in Portland. PDX Pop celebrates its 15th year with bands like Mr. Wrong, Ritual Veil, Miss Rayon, Nick Normal, Petite, Earl Thomas and the Pain, and many, many more, as well as a street fair, refreshments, and Riggs Kitball. Again, that's PDX Pop on Saturday, July 21st and Sunday, July 22nd at Audio Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm, on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. It's 9:01. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Here's what we have coming up for you this morning on KBOO. First, it's Project Censored today, talking to investigative journalist Peter Byrne.